All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of ENW Podcast or Edification and Wellbeing. Today, we have a very interesting person who's going to be talking with me in the podcast. A friend of mine, she graduated with me from high school. She's a marathon runner, and she is an atmospheric scientist and physicist. We're going to be talking about how the atmosphere and environment and aerosols and all of these things affect or have an effect on our health and in our behavior and in our fitness. We're going to talk about also about the her experiences and views on you know, athleticism, sports, exercising and dieting, among other things. Clearly, this is a conversation that in my opinion, should have gone a little longer. I had to cut it short. Hopefully we can have this conversation again. She's up for it. So we'll see when we can do it, make it happen. But I definitely stay with a few more questions about the atmosphere and with physics and how these things affect the human body and things like that. So again, hopefully we can do this again. But as I always start my episodes, and I'll repeat it, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being part of this. My podcast plays have increased a little bit, which is great. More people are joining and listening. So thank you for that. If you're just joining today, I hope you like it. Please leave me a review on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts, on iTunes, wherever you happen to listen to your podcast. Leave me a review. If you use the Anchor.fm app to listen to my podcast and any other podcast, there is a feature there that you can send me a voicemail, and there you can tell me, you know, use that and let me know about you, who you are, where you're listening from, and I'll play that at the beginning of the episodes if you like. Another reminder or a reminder that I've been doing in every episode, if you are a professional in any scientific field or psychology or education or athleticism or sports and fitness and health in general, that is, you know, related to the things that I speak on this podcast, you can contact me at my email, quantum.fithealth@gmail.com. There's a link in the description of this video, of this episode, I'm sorry. And let me know if you want to talk or have a conversation in my podcast. I'm looking for people or more people to talk to. I've been contacting and sending emails. And I really want to have more conversational experiences to keep exploring, you know, the things that affect our health and fitness and education. Okay. Also consider donating to this podcast, as I've been saying, to have access to research, to have access to, well, travel, be able to reach people, to interview or to books and or better quality equipment. So anyways, links to all that are on the description of this episode. Thank you for listening. Thank you for participating. As always, I encourage you to share this with your friends and family. And I think the best participation that you can have, and it's something that I won't even notice, is you discussing these topics with your people, with your friends, with your family. If you are an educator, if you're a teacher with your students, if you are a coach with your athletes, if you're a trainer with your clients and whatnot. Talk about these things, and reach out to me if you feel like whatever it is that I'm presenting here in this podcast, if you think that is not necessarily true or right. Right, I talk a lot about psychological theories and philosophical theories in this podcast, but I'm not a philosophist and I'm not a psychologist, so I'm very open for constructive and respectful criticism, of course. So yeah, reach out to me and let me know. But yeah, I mentioned a few weeks ago that I was planning on playing music in the podcast at the beginning or at the end, sort of a way to to play you into the conversation or out from the conversation. So today I got a song, and it's called "The Atmosphere," and it's by Little Glass Man. And I'll just play it in after this introduction, and then after the song, then there's it'll continue to the podcast, to the conversation on the podcast. So if you don't want to listen to the song, just go to skip to the minute 20, and from there the conversation will go on. This is a quite long conversation. It's an hour and 15 minutes, hour 16 minutes, more or less. So as I've said before, it is a very interesting one. You don't have to sit down for 1 hour and 15 minutes to listen to the whole conversation, the complete conversation. So you can always just listen to part of a conversation and then just try to remember exactly where the what minute you stop listening, so that way you can continue from there until you listen to the podcast. I am one who listens to very long podcasts, tangentially speaking, the Mindscape podcast I listen to Joe Rogan or Star Talk and all these things, Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson, all different type of podcasts. But anyway, some of them are very long format conversation. Joe Rogan, for example, have been up to 3 hours talking with people. So what I do is I do that. I listen as long as I want or as I can, right? While I'm driving or while I'm exercising. But when it's my time to go see my clients of personal training, or it's my time to study or anything, that I will just stop there and try to remember where I was and continue from there. Another thing I do is I just put my headphones when I go to bed, and you know, that's a way for me to, I would say, go to sleep. Then I listen to the podcast too. So you can do that. All right. I will now play you out with the song called "The Atmosphere" by Little Glass Man, and then it'll continue to the conversation with Dr. Mayra Oyola, a scientist, or atmospheric scientist and physicist. All right. Hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think. All right. Talk to you in the next episode. Have a good one. Hey, quick correction here. I've mentioned I'm not playing you out. I'm playing you in. And second, the minute... or you just skip if you don't want to listen to the song, is the minute 4:20. 4:20. I said minute 20, and that's very deep into the conversation. So minute 4:20, and that'll take you straight to the conversation if you don't want to listen to the song. Now, without further ado, let's talk. So starting from this,
we keep going in English then. So I guess the first question is kind of like a little introduction of what you do and who you are, what you do, how you came to be what you are, and why.
Okay, so I am Dr. Mayra Oyola. I actually I am from Guaynabo, Puerto Rico. I decided to actually pursue sciences. I started doing physics at the University of Puerto Rico, Mayagüez West campus. But from there, I love physics and I love exploration. I feel like more than a scientist, I am also an explorer. But
cool.
I always cared about the environment and understanding our actual Earth. I know that there's lots of things out there about exploring space and understanding different galaxies and other planets and how we're part of this big system. But at the same time, for me, I wanted to understand better our Earth. So I fell in love with meteorology, and most people think meteorology is just, you know, standing in front of the TV, giving the forecast. But I'm more, mm-hmm. I'm more of a scientist or a physicist. So I apply physics to understand the atmosphere, understand cloud processes, understanding atmospheric composition, climate change, etc.
Oh, that's nice.
So from Puerto Rico, I moved to Washington, D.C. to get my PhD in atmospheric sciences. I had a blast. Opposite to what most people think, grad school was actually pretty amazing. I did get to travel and do a lot of field research around the world, trying to understand the impacts of different constituents into the atmosphere. And from there, now I am in California. I actually worked for the government. I'm a scientist, trying to understand processes in the atmosphere, but also develop new techniques using satellites and computational algorithms to understand weather, implications of weather and human behavior, and other aspects.
Oh, that's cool. That is cool. I like that you mentioned that the fact that some people think that like meteorologists are just people who stand in front of a TV, because the same thing happens with me when I say I'm a physical educator, because that's what I studied and that's what I went to university for. And people think, well, in what school do you work? And people don't understand, or many people don't understand, that physical education goes beyond that, right? Goes to,
exactly.
For example, personal training is part of physical education, or physical therapy, or occupational therapy, and all of these things are part or are under the umbrella of physical education. And one of the things I try to do with this podcast and with people that I speak to is that help people understand that physical education is a universe more than anything else. So I like the fact that you mentioned, you know, you clarify that you're not, meteorologists are not just people who stand in front of a TV and read whatever the weather is going to be.
Yes, I agree. And I think that happens a lot in different fields, especially when you're involved with science. I think like they get, you know, a label, and society probably doesn't understand that there's much more to that label. So yeah, I think that's something that we share, and that's fantastic that we're talking about this right now.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned in one of the comments on Facebook about how aerosols and the atmosphere affects health, and you just mentioned also behavior. That's one of the things that I'm very interested to, because when it comes to health and fitness, we tend, or popular culture makes it seems like, well, you just need one exercise, you just need one diet, or this specific method, but no one seems to talk about how we need to somewhat, I would say, internalize and create awareness of our behaviors and see how these are affecting how we engage in health and healthy practices and whatnot. How does atmosphere affect? I mean, I have a general knowledge, but can you speak a little more about it? How does it affect health and behavior?
Oh, definitely. So obviously, I mean, let's think about weather. When we wake up in the morning, especially us that live in a very invariable climate, the first thing that we do is to kind of figure out what the weather is going to be. So it's going to be cold? Is it going to rain? Because these activities actually control how we behave or how we pursue the rest of the day. Like, we need to be aware if there are dangers or hazards going into work. We need to be aware of what type of clothes are we going to need in order to protect ourselves. And even if you think about it from the standpoint of nutrition, different places with different weather or climates, they will produce certain crops or harvests. And the same thing with even what you desire to eat for that day. Sometimes because it's too cold, you want to eat a soup, or sometimes, you know, it's too hot and you need to eat something that's colder in order to control your body temperature. So, I mean, weather really impacts a lot of what we do on a daily basis, in a positive and in negative way. So that depends on how we see it, and that depends on the experience that we have. I would say, I know that you mentioned aerosols. Aerosols are quite controversial, and I think, like, the first time that I told my parents that I studied aerosols, they thought I was just, like, running around with cans of spray around, because, you know, you think aerosols, you think spray. And actually, what an aerosol is they're just tiny particles in the atmosphere, and they are actually the drivers of weather. Like, you need aerosols to actually have precipitation. So most people think that because there are clouds are formed by water and you just need water. That is not necessarily true. Like, in order to get rain and to get all these systems, you need to have a particle to where water can attach to, so it can actually fall to the surface of the earth. I think that's the best way to describe it. The same thing for cloud formation. Clouds just don't form purely on water. Like, you need a particle to start the entire process. So aerosols are significant because they are going to drive your weather. Now, there are natural aerosols that come from the surface of the earth, such as dust. They are also anthropogenic aerosols, which are basically pollution or contamination. And we see, especially when people burn trash, so there's something called biomass burning, these particles actually come up into the atmosphere. And they can also trigger certain weather processes, but at the same time, they also cause health hazards or problems. They may trigger problems to certain part of the population. An example of this, I want to talk about a little the fires that we had here in California a couple of months ago.
Right.
So we had massive fires. We had two big fires at the same time. We had one close to where I am in Monterey, Wood County fire, or the Camp Fire, where an entire town actually got destroyed, which is really sad.
Did you have to move out? Like, you have to move out for that time, or?
At that time, we're 100 miles away from where the fire was. And you could still see 100 miles downwind the smoke approaching. And we had, like, really bad air quality for days. So what happens with these types of particles is that they actually, when you breathe, you breathe them in. And they get absorbed by your lungs. So, and it's not like you can get rid of them. They actually stay there. Normally, one of the biggest issues that we have is telling people not to go outside. And if they go outside, cover your face, limit the amount of exposure that you have. And especially, I'm a runner, as you know. The biggest thing for runners is, you know, don't go out running outside. And we had issues with people who actually didn't think that this was true, that the government was just trying to scare people and trying to take attention from the news, which is not true. This is an actually well-studied event that has lots of impacts on health.
I guess even let's just say that even the government started a fire just to make, you know, all this thing and takes people's attention away. I mean, the fire was still there, right? And it'll affect people's health.
Exactly. It doesn't matter who caused it. And I think that's where a lot of the issues were at place. People were trying just to blame who was in charge of the fire. But at the moment in time, obviously, the biggest concern was to actually control the fire and take people out of the danger areas. But for the normal citizen, you also have to be aware that what you're breathing in, it may harm you. It may harm your kids, may harm your pets. So you need to be able to take the necessary measures and understand what's going on and how this will actually impact your body long term.
Okay. So you're understanding that were there any cases of people like runners, for example, or hikers just going out regardless of, you know, you guys telling them, hey, just,
I mean, oh, yeah.
Fucking
oh, God. When the last fire happened, it was in November, I want to say November 17. And so Monterey is well known for two big races. So one of them is Big Sur Marathon, which happens around April. And the other one is the Monterey Bay Half. So the Monterey Bay Half happened during this time, and they had to cancel the race, and they had to cancel it the night before. We have runners from all over the states and all over the world coming into this race. And of course, people were upset because the race was canceled. And they were blaming the race director for these issues. Why do you cancel the race? It's just a little smoke. We train for 10, 12, 18 weeks, paid a lot of money to come here. But no, they didn't understand that decision was made in order to protect them. And still the next day, even though the race was canceled, there were hundreds of people running the course on their own, exposed to this type of pollution. And it's the same thing with high, for example, other high pollution events. Sometimes, for example, if you go into Bakersfield, California, you have a lot of biomass burning, mostly from the petroleum industry. And you see this, it's actually the most contaminated city in the United States. And and you see people there, they have systems, they have air quality labels, depending on the amount of particles in the atmosphere. You can go to air quality now or actually like even weather apps have information about weather. And sometimes they're told, you know, you have to avoid being outside or avoid to, you know, run in these areas or hike in these areas. And people completely disregard what is going on. And these things are serious. You can, especially for people who have heart problem issues or any respiratory issues, this is a serious deal.
Yeah. And it could be, I mean, I don't know, you may know a little more, but even like skin issues and things like that, or affecting the eyes or ears, you know, all these things get
that,
in your body.
That is correct. It's not only the heart and your lungs, but skin. Some people can be allergic. You can have some eyes and skin reactions as well. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I have a theory now that you're mentioning that, because I have experience from the side of physical education. I used to work in a physical therapy clinic, and big part, like whenever we had athletes, they were people who, I mean, they were told even by their trainers or by their coaches, all right, don't go running. Your knee's not ready yet, or your back is not ready yet, and they would just go and train. And I remember in the first gym that I worked, I had a lady who used to compete in javelin throwing, and so she had a shoulder impingement. And well, I was trying to help her, and she was like, "Yeah, but whenever I put my arm in this position, and she would start screaming." And I said, "Well, I will say, then don't put your arm in that position. You know, don't push yourself." And I think, I don't know, I guess as a species or somehow we like pain, we like suffering. Or another theory or another possibility is that we are being told so much that we need to constantly work out, constantly move, constantly do these things that will promote health, right, and make us somehow immortal and indestructible and whatnot, that we think that we have transcended biology. We think that, hey, it doesn't matter. You know, I will out-strengthen, or I will just find another way through supplementation or I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's part of human nature just to put our limits. And in a way, that's good, because that's how we have advanced. but sometimes, you know, extremes are bad. So sometimes you got to be mindful of where you are at and, you know, value your body and protect yourself from not only environmental factors, but from overdoing exercise. And it's funny that you talk about that, because I mean, I'm a scientist. As you know, I'm also a runner. And I think runners especially have this tendency of pushing through the limits. And it's something that we do. Yeah. We have, you know, an endorphins high. We go running, chasing that, you know, that run feeling. And sometimes, and I think the issue also is that you're exposed to social media and you kind of get competitive and you start comparing yourself with what other people are doing. And that's a really bad approach, because especially if you're coming from a point, from standpoint, or from a point where you're injured and you keep pushing it, it's, you obviously know this better than me, it's not going to end well.
Yeah. Well, it happened again by working in physical therapy. We had people, not just athletes, but even people who, I don't know, used to work in a warehouse or anything, you know, something started hurting and they wouldn't find help, or they wouldn't find ways to modify or adapt to that. And they would just keep pushing. And I remember that at least 10 of the patients mentioned the no pain, no gain thing. Mm-hmm. It was like one of the athletes mentioned that, and an older gentleman who got injured working. They said, you know what, fuck it, no pain, no gain. And I'm like, well, fuck it, no pain, no gain. That's why you're here now. And it shouldn't happen. It's not that a physical therapist is a bad thing, right? Or a physical educator. But there shouldn't be, in my opinion, there shouldn't be the amount of demand for that field that there is now.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the culture right now. And again, social media has a lot to do with it. Social media is great because it helps us connect. But at the same time, especially on platforms like Facebook and Instagram, you see people constantly posting about, you know, let's grind, no pain, no gain. We have to work hard. And they kind of downplay the role of rest and, you know, protecting your body and doing things to honor what you do on a daily basis.
I one of the issues that I found in all these years working in schools and physical therapy clinics and gyms and fitness studios and all that is that somehow we have all of these crazy exercise programs and that, in my opinion, having studied biomechanics, that do not go according to our natural movement patterns, right? Running, for example, is easy for people because it's something that is natural. In fact, I was reading a research paper the other day that was trying to make the case for running as being what made us the type of humans we are now, because we needed to cover long distances and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that made us able to do that. Versus just walking, because hey, any other animal can walk out there, whatever distance, and just rest a little bit under a tree and just keep moving. But in our case, somehow, for whatever environments we were exposed all around the world, then running was that common thing that made us reach longer distances. So running is super easy, or even walking is super easy. Swimming is easy. Squatting down is easy. Or like lifting things and putting them on your shoulders, it's easy. And it's something that, to my opinion, our organism will adapt faster and easier, because these are things that we've been doing for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, if not millions. So, but then we got, let's say, I mentioned a lot of CrossFit. I guess I'm going to get fired by a lot of CrossFitters. But for example, we are not built to do 300,000 repetitions of powerlifting, right? Or snatches or push presses, or, you know, 300,000 push-ups, or, you know, I would say, and not even in the way that it is doing it, that the human biomechanics are not built for us having a bar over our head and squatting down all the way. We lift things, but we put them on our shoulders or on our backs. And there are sort of like some natural postures that we, that our body assumes that we can do these things. So that's one of the reasons that you see, for example, in CrossFit, the level of injury that these people suffer. Same thing with old school fitness training. When you sit in a bench press machine or in a chest press or whatever squatting machine, my theory is that somehow our subconscious fires back. It says, okay, what the heck is this? I'm not built for this crap. I'm not built for sitting and having this perfect form and segmenting my body in different ways. I'm built for using my whole body. I'm built for moving all naturally and everything in connection. So that's what I'm thinking when it comes to trends in exercising. And same thing in dieting, right? We have all of these people taking crazy pills, like crazy amount of pills, in which it just translates into expensive pee.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I appreciate, and I think, I mean, as a scientist, I believe in the value of supplementation up to a point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes for X or Y reason, you need to supplement, maybe because you're not following a well-balanced diet. You know, we live in a crazy world. However, I think that's something that you have to work with a professional, not just self-prescribe yourself. And you cannot supplement a bad diet. You can not outrun, I always say this, you cannot outrun a bad diet, because sometimes in the world of runners, like, we like to eat. You think because you ran 60 miles, you're allowed to eat the entire world, and that's not true. And it's the same thing comes with supplementation. It's something that you have to be extremely careful with. And it's not going to, you cannot out supplement your diet. If you don't eat a balanced diet, your balanced day to day nutrition. I shouldn't even use the word diet. But you know, your day to day nutrition, if you are missing certain nutrients, you can supplement, but at the same time, you should try to get whatever you need for your body from foods. And this is where nowadays, and I think we all have been victims of that. And I can talk as a person from my experience, because I've done it too. You know, years ago, I was basically trying to, lose weight, and I will try to shortcut certain things. And I learned the hard way that that's not the way to do it. So I definitely agree with you. Definitely, we shouldn't be taking these shortcuts.
No, it's very dangerous. I've seen, I had a case of a former client of mine. I'm not kidding. These people, well, it was husband and wife. And I'm not kidding when I say that their whole countertop was filled with shakes, powders, juices, pills, caplets of all sorts of supplements. And they ran me over whatever it is that they drank in the morning. And the morning alone was about a pound of supplements. And I'm like, when I saw that, I was like, my mind was screaming. And what I was trying to find out was, how the fuck do I tell these people that this is extremely dangerous? They're doing this. They have been doing this for more than 10 years. So they're used to that. So slowly through exercises, I found a way for a little way, not too much, a way for them to start understanding that we should embrace natural things, right? In terms of movements, the natural movements versus, like traditional weight training and whatnot. And then I would sort of like throw a little curveball with the supplementation. Hey, just be careful. Maybe in the morning, eat, a boiled egg or get some vegetables too. And sometimes in the husband's case, he would catch it right away and say, you always trying to get me to eat whatever food. And I'm like, because we eat food.
Because humans are supposed to eat food.
Exactly. I remember this person had, read a lot of books. He's also a runner. And he had read a lot of books, and he was always saying, I have read it all. I know it all. And in my mind, I would say, then what am I doing here, right? And I'm trying to explain to him, since you read all of his science, right, and all of his books, then you understand that evolutionarily speaking and biologically speaking, we have evolved to eat at least most of our diet, whatever nature creates. Fruits, vegetables, meats, fish, and without thinking, oh well, you know, I'm gonna get seaweed supplements because Japanese people eat more seaweed. Because one of the beauties of a human body is that we adapt.
That is correct.
To wherever we are. It was a very hard thing, but I've seen that like, well, many, many times. What are your thoughts on? Well, I guess you've mentioned a little bit, but what has been like the diets you've done and the craziest thing you've done?
Wow, I think so I grew up and I always, and you remember from when we were in high school, I was skinny, very skinny. So once I started college, you know, I gained weight, and that for me was foreign. And of course, there's always the negative comments from people. Hey, you gain weight, you look heavier. What have you been doing in college? So, and you know, probably that those types of things actually don't affect me now, but yes, back then. So I think I went into one of those TV juice diets. I didn't eat for like 3 days, and that was the stupidest thing. I mean, because right after you're done, basically you just have diarrhea all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not eating much. You're just drinking a juice. You have diarrhea and you don't lose any weight because basically everything that you have lost is just diarrhea. So it took me a while. So I went into like this yo-yo stage in my life. And it wasn't until at some point I've always been very active. But during that period in time, I was not as active because I was focused in college. But it wasn't until I said to myself, enough is enough. I need to learn more about how to have a healthy lifestyle that's sustainable, not just something that's going to be a quick fix. And I read this book about, it was Clean Eating. It was written by Tosca Reno. And she brought a great point where basically her diet diet as of what we eat on a daily basis is just based on clean foods, fruits, vegetables, lean meats, fish. And I mean, it all makes sense. It's everything. And she doesn't try to, she talks about deprivation, and that's something that she mentions, you know, of course you have to eat healthy, but you shouldn't be depriving yourself. It was at that point where I actually got it. And it's something that I have kept with me during the rest of my life. And even now as a runner, so I started running consistently about 2 years ago. And I'm a marathon and ultra marathon runner at this point. So you need lots of calories to sustain that activity. But again, even though you have to fuel for a different activity, I still use the same principles. Eat healthy, eat fruits, vegetables. I'm never being into any extreme or weird diet. And I know that there's a lot of those out there. Try to, you know, control candy and sweets that they're not doing any good to your body, but sometimes you actually crave them. So, you know, it's just about finding that balance.
Balance. That's the thing. In my case, I for a period of time, I was also a chef. Self-made, but then I started working at restaurants and whatnot and then doing cooking lessons. And I love cooking. I love food. I'm the first one, like, if you invite me to a party, I'm going to say, what do I bring? Whiskey, wine, beer. I make bread. You want me to make bread? Hey, I made bacon ice cream. You want me to bring it? But it's about not abusing. I guess popular culture instills in us this idea that we have to do a lot of something to be healthy. Same thing, exercise, or hey, we have to do this extreme diet just to be healthier. And what I try to tell people is that, for example, if we rewind back to when we were like cavemen and cavewomen, there was no such thing as me stopping. And, you know, let's say you and I were hunting and you were like, oh, look at the animal, or no, no, let's find food. And I'm like, well, no, I got to do my Pilates now. You know, I can't because I got to do Pilates. Or, yeah. You know, or asking you like, hey, but is that paleo, or how many calories of that, you know, mammoth has? We would just go and eat, right? And we have developed as an organism this natural way of knowing when we're full, when we've had enough. And it has been throughout different societies and cultures and ideas of abundance and whatnot that we have somehow distorted that notion.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I've been reading a lot lately about the process of evolution and the, not just in physical movement, which is what I specialize in, but in the nutrition also. And I was listening to a presentation from the University of Oxford and the topic of evolutionary or the evolution of human nutrition. And the professor was talking about these things. Like, he was like, okay, perfect. Yeah, we're talking about here having taken all of these supplements, or that I have to eat more protein versus more carbs versus more fats versus less this and that. When thousands of years ago, we never asked for that. In fact, if we rewind back to 500 years ago, that didn't happen. And so I came to the conclusion, and I posted it on my Instagram, that if all of this was required, like let's say doing one specific exercise program like CrossFit or eating paleo diet, if this was really required for humans to have to evolve to what we are, not having done that for the thousands of years and the millions of years that we have been evolving, then it should have been, you know, our demise. Yes. We would have stopped existing. So you mentioned you're doing ultra marathons. That's interesting.
Yes. Well, I actually started, it's more of a change of terrain thing. So normally most marathons are on road, and I started running on trails, which is, it's a challenging thing, but it requires other muscles than just road racing. It's a very different type of racing too, because it's not just about going as fast as you can, because if you overexert yourself at the beginning or going uphill, you're not going to be able to finish. So I think it's one of those things that actually, even though it's really challenging, it also teaches you balance and a better understanding of your body. The other thing about trail running, which is really interesting, is that it's kind of like a strength sport, and people sometimes don't see it that way. So you need to cross train in order to be good at it. And I think that's one part in which runners, or an area in which runners sometimes don't really pay a lot of attention to. It's to actually strengthen your muscles and do your core.
Sorry to interrupt. You mentioned that I talked to a running coach here in the podcast a few weeks ago. I'll send you the link so you can listen. She's a good friend of mine. In fact, whenever you're running here in Florida, she does also marathons and things like that. So I'll put you in contact with her. But she was mentioned about the importance of cross training and how many people, runners specifically, are ignoring that. That's very important. What do you do for cross training? Like, what are you combining your running with?
So I actually, when I started running, I had this habit of not taking days off and just running. And you know what happened afterwards, right? Injury. So one of the things that I started to do is actually combining my training with what I call cross training. Sometimes it is just bike riding. Sometimes that depends on what I'm training for in my day at work, because obviously I'm busy during the day, so I had to find the best time to do certain things. But just even like hitting the gym and having a basic routine at the gym, you know, squats, especially upper body, and the same thing with upper body and core, because you don't actually use them much as when you're running. Or you don't use them directly when you're running, but you actually need to have a strong core to be a good runner. So
it does affect.
These are
it does affect.
Yes, it does affect. So I normally try to do exercises to target the areas that I don't necessarily target when I'm running. Same thing with exercises to incite glute activation when I run, especially going uphill. I am the type of runner who's kind of like that I overuse my hamstrings a lot. So I'm hamstring heavy. So sometimes I do have to make sure that my glutes are activated and that I'm conscious about the strides that I'm making while I'm running. It takes a lot of practice. It's not something that that sometimes comes naturally, but eventually you learn how to do it. And in doing that, I have avoided injury. I haven't been injured in a while. The one thing that I would say about runners, and I actually took a week or 2 weeks off recently, is that same thing. Like, it's a heavy sport. And sometimes you got to take into consideration that you're not a full-time athlete. You also have a life, and you have family, and you have a work, and a job that you have to attend to. And sometimes, you know, your cortisol levels go up because you're stressed out or tired. And that influences or impacts your running. So you got to listen to your body. And there are times in which you are running that you feel your body talking to you loudly and saying, I need a break. And that happened to me 2 weeks ago. I was on a run, trail run. We made it to the top of the mountain. And at the top, I was just like, okay, I feel my body is off balance right now. I definitely enjoy running, but right now it's not being as enjoyable as it should be. So it's time for me to rest. And I did it. I took 2 weeks off. I started running again, and I was feeling fantastic. Like I could take over the world. So those are things that you have to always take into consideration. It's, you know, the cross-training part is important because you exercise certain parts of your body that you don't necessarily exercise during running. And the other one will be listen to your body. Your body will tell you when you need to rest. Take that rest and avoid injury and enjoy the process. It's all about having fun with it.
Exactly. I think that the balance aspect is very important. The cross training is very essential. I've trained a few runners. I've trained people who ride bicycles, and many athletes, football players and whatnot. And I'm always trying to find a way to implement other movements that are not necessarily specific to the sport. However, that there is a carryover, that there is a translation from that movement to whatever it is that you do.
Yes.
Not long ago, I was training a golf pro. And for example, well, I found that not just golf, but baseball, for example, is a rotational sport. I found that tennis is a rotational sport. I found that naturally we rotate our core when we move and we walk and we run. So I try to implement, you know, a different, I would say, movement methods from or practices from those things into his golf. And his game went up a lot. And we very seldom like did heavy lifting things.
Yes, so, but, and I agree with that. That's something I try to avoid. It's actually doing heavy lifting. You should lift enough so you feel you are actually exercising. But that was actually something that I learned very quickly years ago from a mentor, actually. He would tell me, try not to, you know, you see all these people like lifting big weights and they cannot even complete a rep. Like, you should be able to, you know, feel that challenge, but at the same time be able to complete your reps.
Exactly. Well, and that's very important, because I'm always trying to look at things from, again, this evolutionary and biological need perspective. If we couldn't lift something, then we would just live it out and keep moving, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I try to help people understand when it comes to functional training. I mean, any training could be functional depending on what you do. Like if you run for ultra marathons and you train for that, then that's your functional training. But I bring it more to the level of practical training, daily living type of training. And I mean, again, going back to caveman, if I couldn't lift a big stone to kill a prey or to defend myself or defend my family, then I would leave that stone there. You know, I wouldn't go and break my back, because breaking your back in that time would mean death.
Yeah.
And although it doesn't happen right now, like we're not in the African savanna running around and all this, injury means, I would say, still mean death, right? Because then your organism will feel useless, all right? And the basic, one of those basic human needs we have is that we need to be useful for not just ourselves, for the people that surround us. Like, you know, in my case, I have a daughter, I have a stepson, I have a wife, whatever. Whatever happened to them, I need to be able to be useful for them.
Yes, I find it's fantastic that you brought that point, because I feel that's a problem sometimes with the running community as well. I run. It's something that I enjoy doing, but I run to the point it does not take me away from my responsibilities. I've seen cases in which people, for X or Y reason, I don't want to judge, because sometimes you just need that space to kind of find a release. But some people put running above other things, like, you know, your job or your family. And if you are not, you know, if you're doing something that's taking you away from the things that are important, it's not healthy anymore.
Yeah. I used to have a friend that he was like that. Like we would call him, like, hey man, let's go to the beach. Okay. Let me work out first. All right. We're going to the movies. All right. Let me do a little workout here. I got to go to the gym first. To the point that his girlfriend left him. And then, you know, the little group of friends would stop calling him because, fuck it, man. What's wrong with you? And it was this addiction problem to always feel hot, always feel that he's being looked at, always feel pumped. The feeling of that pump, yep, it makes him feel stronger and whatnot.
So, and that goes into, you know, problems with self-image and mm-hmm, which we are seeing nowadays. And I think that's part of the obsession that we have with fitness nowadays. I mean, I started working out basically because my mom worked out, and she taught me that it was something healthy to do. And as soon as I started doing it, I was feeling good. I felt good about it. I felt energetic. So I've been exercising for basically since I was 7 or 8 years old.
All of your life.
But in the last, I would say probably 5, 6, maybe 10 years, I feel like we are going a little bit overboard with fitness. It's important to exercise. It's important to have a balance. But I agree with you when you talk about there are all these programs, all of these extreme exercises that are sometimes a little bit unnatural for our human form. Or people, instead of having just one workout a day, they have 2, 3, 5 workouts a day. So there's a limit. The body can just take so much. So it's important that we learn balance. Relationships, balance in our fitness, and balance with family, job, etc.
I've seen marriages break because of diets and exercises. I've seen family fighting. Having worked in gyms, I used to work in the gyms in this gym in Puerto Rico, which doesn't exist anymore, so I can mention the name. It was Active Living Club in Guaynabo. That's by near San Patricio.
Yeah, I think I remember that gym.
That was la creme de la creme of, you know, like the richest of the richest would go there. And it was crazy. Like, you would see moms going there and just dropping their kids 2, 3, 4 hours. You know, and there was a daycare. Okay, and yes, you deserve your space, right? If you have kids, I said you shouldn't deserve a space in which you don't talk to your kids for 5 hours, you know, they still need your attention. They're being attended by somebody else. But you would see all of these crazy things in which I would say in that case, even the aspect of a social class affected too. And it was a crazy thing. I was called by a client once on a Saturday. I remember because I always tell my clients, I'm with you. I'm for you from Monday to Friday. And if we skip a workout and you have something like a sporting event coming, let's say I'm training you and you have a marathon coming, and I say, hey, we can meet Saturday too to meet the demand, right? Whatever it is that you need. But anyways, this client called me and she's like, hey, I have a wedding tomorrow. Do you think I should go? Because, you know, I'm exercising with you and I'm doing this diet. And I'm like, what the fuck? The first thing that I said was, if you were a family of mine or a friend of mine, I would just scratch you off in my book. Because that's not healthy. You're supposed to enjoy your family and your friends and all of it. And because of a diet, you're not going there. What is wrong with you? However, I have seen trainers telling their clients that. I have seen trainers telling them, all right, if you feel like it's your family what's holding you back, then you find a way to move away from them.
Yes.
And
I heard that. I heard that directly before. And in some cases, I can understand, for example, if there's someone who is battling a certain health issue and this person is surrounded by people who are unhealthy, I understand that, you know, establishing a distance. But, I mean, not everybody, you know, we all have our limitations. You have a family and I we're not perfect. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that, again, you keep a balance, that you understand that, you know, exercise time is exercise time, that good nutrition doesn't have to be perfect all the time, that you are allowed to go for, you know, whatever you're craving for, you know, within a balance. And for example, uh-huh. I love pizza and beer, and that's my go-to craving, my guilty yeah. pleasure. And it's not like I'm drinking and eating beer. I mean, eating pizza every day, but, you know.
But you get it.
Yeah,
whenever you're craving, you get it.
Of course. You have to enjoy life.
I was talking to a body positivity coach from Canada here in the podcast too. And she mentioned something very interesting. And she mentioned that it is worse and even unhealthy to eat a piece of cake with guilt than without it.
Oh, right? Yes. That is true.
I've seen this all the time. I've gotten to the point that I don't do diets. That's the first thing I got on my website for people to read. I don't do diets. I don't do magic pills. And even like that, people go to my website, read everything, and they say, hey, but don't you have this, you know, certain trick under your sleeve that I can somehow transform my life in 30 days? And I'm like, okay, did you go to my website? Did you go to my website? Yeah, I read it all. Did you read the paragraph, the first paragraph? And they were like, yeah, but there was always this but. I was going to ask you.
That may be part of the social media. I think we now live in a culture that it's all about instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are certain things in life that are not going to come quick to you. You have to work for them. And I think fitness and establishing those really good, healthy habits, that takes a while. That takes practice.
Well, that's why I'm very interested in psychology. I remember when I was in university, we took behavioral psychology and learning psychology, and I started to connecting that to sports training and physical education and all this. And I think that more than 50%, in fact, almost 90% of this is psychological. So we think that we start doing a workout and somehow that's going to transform our lives. But the word transformation implies, you know, a great sacrifice, implies letting things be, also implies changes that will not necessarily happen in not even in, you know, we have this trend of the 12-week transformation programs. These things are not going to happen like that. And just like you said, social media then plays a big role in how we see things. I started doing online fitness coaching, right? And this lady calls me and I'm training her and she's, you know, I'm always not pushing things. Like if you call me and you tell me, hey, I haven't exercised in years, or I have never exercised or never eaten any nutritious thing, I will not push you to a level of frustration. I would say, okay, instead of eliminating bad things, let's just add one good thing,
mm-hmm.
right? From your diet and in exercising, since we're doing it online and you can train literally or exercise whenever you want, wherever you want, or wherever you are in the world, then let's adapt this to your lifestyle. So you can break the workouts in three, 5 minute workouts, right? And she was adapting to that. And it was great. That method was great for her because her work required, you know, 12-hour shifts. So she could literally do 5 minutes from the workout here and there, and then 5 minutes from the workout here and there. She was losing weight. Although I'm not a weight loss trainer, that's something that she was looking for. So she was going there. But then I remember in the second month, she started texting me like through my fitness app, like, hey, I saw this cleanse, pineapple cleanse, whatever on Facebook. And I'm okay. That's a bunch of noise. Ignore that. Stick to the plan. I gave you very simple, basic nutritional advice that you can do that for your lifestyle, for your way of eating, whatnot. If you go to the side of social media, you're going to go crazy. And she's like, oh, okay. Thank you. Next day. Oh, I saw this other thing on Facebook. And the thing was that she had joined all of these crazy groups of cleansing and crazy stuff. She ended up quitting the exercises and the basic stuff that I was giving her. And then I saw her on Facebook and she was like twice the size that she was before she started with me. And it's very, very frustrating from a physical educator.
Yeah, that's,
and trainer
that,
standpoint.
Yeah, that's a very sad story. And I think, mm-hmm. Fitness and the same thing with the I guess the health medicine industry goes through the same as we go. I mean, scientists have the same issue where now everyone can just go out in the internet. The internet is such a wonderful resource, but you have to be mm-hmm. careful with what you read. But now we have all these people who believe that because they read an article on Wikipedia or something on Facebook or something on Instagram, they are experts. So it's uh-huh. kind of like the fight between, you know, you have a formal education at an accredited institution. So it's the fight between, you know, being a professional from X, Y, or Z college against people who are pretending to graduate from Wikipedia University or Facebook college.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we joke about it, but it's true. There's so much misinformation out there. And I think that's it's really important that people like you and me continue to talk about our respective fields like you're doing here with the podcast. And mm-hmm. really educate people on you know what's real.
Uh-huh. It's hard. It's very hard. In my case, I live in a very rural area of Central Florida, so this is more of a like a retired community, people and like more very southern, very traditional type of community. And you know there is Hispanics and there's Latinos and all that, but still. Everyone that comes here sort of subscribe to that mentality of rural America. And there is data that proves, not necessarily proof, but that says that rural areas in America are the worst areas when it comes to health because of there are many factors, but one of the factors is that whatever it is that they believe at some point, that's what they're going to stay with, period. So when I say to people, hey, perhaps you don't need to lose weight. Maybe, like, for example, I was approached by a lady at the supermarket. She saw that I was, like, you know, in shape or whatever. And she's like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, hey, I'm a personal trainer. I'm a physical educator. I help people move better, whatnot. And she's like, I wake up every morning and my back is killing me. Perhaps I need to lose weight. So I look at it from the rehabilitation standpoint. I say, no, maybe you don't need to lose weight. Perhaps you need to work on restructuring your body, right? That is perfectly aligned in posture and strengthening the muscles that you need to strengthen or the fascial tissues that needs to be worked for you to deal with that. And she's like, so you're telling me that I don't have to do any diets or weight loss? That's what everybody says. And I mentioned, hey, here's my card. If you give me just, you know, check out my website, give me a call, and I can give you a free consultation. And I will literally prove to you that you don't need to lose weight to eliminate a pain. And in fact, she wasn't even extremely obese. That's one of the biggest issues with this society, that we see someone at a certain size and we say, holy cow, this is a very fat person. And perhaps you could be a little fatter or a little obese, but that doesn't mean that you cannot be fit.
Oh, yes, that's true.
And but I have found that in the research that rural areas have a very hard time. Another of the reasons is that, you know, to go to the park is far. Like it takes me, you know, 20 minute drive to get to the nearest park to go and exercise. So very little people go there. There is very little illumination in the streets. So very little people go out after work and exercise or before work. There are a lot of regulations in retired communities, like where I live, for example, is mostly a retired community, and there is a golf course. And I'm always moving out and climbing trees. But there is this sort of like self-made regulations where the community says, well, you can't be here, you know, exercising, or you can't walk your dog here or whatnot. But also, there are insurance regulations. I try to speak to the golf pro and the administration to bring some sort of like community classes. And the reason and excuse was no insurance, 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 insurance. So people just stay at their homes and do nothing. Versus big cities and more like younger population areas. And that's sad. That is sad. So we'll see how it goes. In a couple months, I'll be moving to near Orlando, which is a younger population and whatnot. And we'll see. I will prove my theory and, you know, the differences between living in rural America and more city.
Yeah, I agree with you. After Puerto Rico, I lived in the Washington, D.C. area, obviously, big city. Mm-hmm. And people move, like you see a lot of people, lots of active people. From there, I moved to Albany, New York, which is technically a city, but it's more, I would say, less than of a hassle than Washington, D.C. And I did notice that that depending on different areas and different age groups, you could see less interest in actually being physically fit or engaging in, mm-hmm. in any sort of, you know, activity. Even here in Monterey, California, it's very active. But if you compare Monterey with any other county, because this is more of a rural area, you can see differences, mm-hmm. especially in certain illnesses. I think there's a big campaign right now trying to get people to exercise in order to prevent heart disease. And it's mm-hmm. targeted to Monterey area because I think it's doing very poorly compared to the rest of California.
Okay. Here is in this area is like that. I'm always very observant and trying to and even more now for research for my book and podcast and whatnot. I'm looking at people, and in this area, people are, it's not necessarily that they're big in size. That doesn't really tell me anything. But you see it, for example, in the way they walk, they're leaning forward, their backs are all messed up, their heels are all swollen. You can see young people, because, I mean, if you even are in the 60s, you're relatively young and you could be functional.
Yeah, of course.
With breathing aids going to the market, and that's very worrying. I think, you know, another, I read something about how in this society, mostly in America, sweating is seen as something bad. Like intrinsically, people think, well, I don't want to sweat, right? And there has been cases and interviews that I've read of people when they're asked like, hey, would you keep moving and exercising after you graduate high school? And they're like, no, I already said sweated all that I had to sweat and I don't plan to do it anymore. So I would like to find out what the heck is going on with that. But that's yet another aspect. Another thing, and this is a very touchy aspect, is the religious aspect. Where I live is extremely religious. And it has been found that the more religious you are, the less physical activity, the more you somehow think that you will be saved anyways. Again, going back to perhaps thinking that we've transcended our biological needs. And that's very interesting. I'll still have to read a little more about it and find research and studies and books and whatnot, but it is a very important topic too.
No, that's definitely very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And something that
I had a case. I did my teaching practice, what was where we graduated from. I had one of the there in Margarita Janel, and one of my students, I was getting ready for the topic of, I think it was volleyball, right? And there was this very obese, hard breathing girl. She was in 11th grade, and I'm like, holy cow, you know, you're very unhealthy. Uh-huh. And again, it's not about the size. It's about how I observe her movements and, you know, going upstairs from the lunchroom. Remember, you know, there were a few stairs.
Yes.
I mean, she was having a very hard time. But anyways, when I was ready to start the volleyball topic, she told me that she couldn't do volleyball or basketball or any of these recreational sports that we did because her religion prohibited it. And so I wrote a letter to her parents, and I'm like, I'm sorry, this is unfair. If she doesn't participate in class, I cannot grade her. And they sent me a letter back that it was true, that the pastor of the church, whatnot, he says that they cannot do this sort of mundane stuff. And it was a back and forth to the point that the pastor came to talk to me and the parents came to talk to me. And I was upset because I said, look at her. She's not even 16 years old or whatever. And she can't breathe while she walks. That's not healthy. It doesn't matter how you think she's going to be saved. And you can believe in whatever you want. I respect that. But that's not healthy. And also, it is not fair for me to grade all of these kids who are working hard for the grade and just give her an A or just a B for participation. And I got in trouble with my supervisor because I said to her parents that I said, even Jesus Christ can come here and take my class and he'll have to take it to pass the class. And they were, of course, extremely offended and whatnot, but I stood my ground, and my supervisor, you know, gave me, he was on my side because I was like, what am I going to do? Plus it's unhealthy, but clearly religion has a big role in how we see and engage in physical activity and healthy practices and whatnot. And although it is a touchy topic and it's a very uncomfortable thing, I am trying to venture into that area to see how it goes and to see why is it that it is like that.
Yeah, that's true. Especially, you know, dealing with kids. I agree with you. At that age, she should be able to be healthy, to be thriving, and not being, you know, having struggle just going a flight of stairs. I think this reminds me of that case of a lady who was suing the school because the teacher made them run for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the students passed out. I was in shock because first, at that age, I think kids should be fit to be able to do any activity for 10 minutes. Obviously,
yeah.
There are different kids with different needs, But a healthy kid should be able to run around. It doesn't have to be at any pace, but at least run around and be physically active for 10 minutes. And instead of being worried about the fact that, you know, my kid is spending too much time watching TV or too much time on Facebook or whatever, or playing video games, the mother sued the school and the teacher.
Exactly. Well, I shared it. I shared it on Facebook. I said that, I mean, and this is true. 10 minutes was just the warm up when we were kids, right?
Oh, yes.
I did baseball. I did basketball. I did karate. I did boxing. And 10 minutes was just the minimum warm up.
Yeah, I think it's the same for me. I did martial arts. I ran track when I was in high school. I've done martial arts as an adult, ran the classical gym, hit. Yeah, 10 minutes is normally your warm up. And it's especially at that age. I mean, it's sad to see kids struggling just to run around for a little while. That shouldn't happen.
Yep. I met a martial arts teacher here in town, and we are getting together so I can do like group fitness classes and whatnot. And there's this lady who goes to the karate school for his stepson, her grandson, I'm sorry. And my daughter goes there. And so we got into talking about her health and fitness and experiences and whatnot. And she's telling me, well, you know, I run 2 miles every day, and I go and do Zumba also. And I'm like, And she's kind of like sort of complaining about how she's not healthy. I'm like, no, at your age, 60 something, 70 something years old, you do all that. You're doing much more than any skinny girl out there or skinny kid who is on the phone all day.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep saying that perhaps the idea that everything is fixed with weight loss is not necessarily truth, right? I mean, this lady can literally go to that school in Mexico and outrun every single kid and not pass out.
Oh, yeah. That's certainly a – you brought another thing, and I think you mentioned it twice, the fact that, you know, not necessarily because you're skinny, you're healthy. I still hear that all the time. You are healthy, you're skinny, or even people, like, even from kids. I've heard kids saying, oh, my dad or my mom does not need to work out because you're skinny. And that's not the reality. That's actually far away from the truth. I actually have a very good friend of mine whose mother, beautiful woman, she looks very young, and she almost lost her life not too long ago because of her inactivity. And she was smoking probably a little bit too much. She had a clot in one of her legs, and that became a really dangerous situation. And that has changed. Now she's a very active woman, still attractive, still beautiful, still skinny. But there's more to just, you know, your size or how do you look to health.
Well, I think the beauty is much more, and because one of the biggest issues with the health and fitness industry is that, you know, people want to look more beautiful, and it has nothing to do. I'm going to go real quick to this anecdote. My best friend, he's a very heavy person, right? He's a lawyer and whatnot, and he used to cook with me, and we would hang out, and I was the guy in shape who was the trainer, going, you know, working at a gym and moving all day. But he was the one getting all the phones from the girls wherever we hung out. And so one day we're just, you know, we decided to just hang out. This is my apartment, and we started just drinking. And I said, hey, man, how the hell is it that you get all of his phone numbers and you're like every weekend you have a new date? And I'm working out, and I'm not. And he said, well, your issue is confidence, right? And I remember because I at that point, I was a very shy person. So, you know, it could be like the hottest woman in the world approached me, and I would just, you know, keep my eyes down, and I wouldn't be approachable. Let's just put it that way. And he was a very approachable person. He was like the life of a party, like making people smile and making people, not just women, but men too, right? Everybody, and to the point, like if I would go to a like common friend's party and he wasn't there, everybody would ask for him. So it has nothing to do, and he explained that, it has nothing to do with how you look. It's just you need to be confident and trust yourself. And it doesn't really matter if you get the phone or not. It's the point of being an approachable person.
Yeah,
right?
And I, yeah, that confidence is part of, you know, of being healthy. That's part of having emotional health.
Exactly. And that was very shocking to me. And then yeah, I started working on that. And implementing it, not necessarily in dating or whatever, but even in my personal training clients, they started noticing that I was a very kind of like a different person, more trustable, more active, more proactive when it comes to talking to them and approaching them and whatnot. And I'm not an old school trainer. I don't yell at people. I hate that. If I know that you're doing something and you are in pain, I'm not going to push you to keep doing it. I'm going to modify it for you. And I'm not, and normally I'm very, I would say, permissive when it comes to, let's say you call me and say, hey, Juan, I cannot train today because I have a business travel. I'm not going to get angry because of that. And I'll try to find a way then to sort of like adapt to your schedule. Even like that, it was a very different story. So again, how you look and how much you weigh. Weight is a very big issue when people learn numbers. They tend to relate that to health. And that's very sad. And that's why I do this, to try to educate people on that and also try to explore, because different cultures have different ideas of what health is and how perhaps I can learn from other cultures and implement them, not just in me, but on my clients and write it on the book.
I agree with that. That is very true. That's something that I have been blessed with, having been able to travel a lot for work. And definitely there's different views on what healthy means to different cultures. And yeah, it's definitely beneficial to learn about those different standpoints.
Well,
to our lives.
I went to a like a fitness equipment show in Los Angeles. That's the one I mentioned at the beginning. And the Life Fitness, you know, the company has like different branches all over the world. So there was the people from Japan, from the Middle East, from Australia, from Brazil and whatnot. And in the morning, one of the mornings, they introduced, before putting them in the show, in the trade show, every employee of the company had to go for a workout to experience the new equipment, right? And literally, you could have a chubby Japanese guy and a chubby Brazilian guy, and they were literally out working out every chubby American. And they looked the same, right? They technically looked the same, but these people were much more functional and had much more energy. And you could see it, of course, there's no way to see that, but you could see, I would say, their emotional energy when it comes to waking up early and having, you know, gone to enjoy the time and having fun. And they were there working out, but because they wanted to be with everybody and just hang out versus, I just wanted to sleep a bit more. You know, and they were literally outworking every chubby American. Now, like, okay, so that's one point that I was discussing with my boss that day, is the looks. It doesn't necessarily mean then that because you are chubby or fat, you are less functional or less fit than somebody else. That was a very interesting point. But anyways, hey, I'm going to have to cut it here.
This has been a really good conversation.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, I want to start, as I said, I want to start a podcast in Spanish too, because some people have been asking. Friends from Puerto Rico and whatnot. So I'll let you know, and perhaps we can talk en español.
Definitely. True.
That'll be nice. Yeah. I am. I have a friend. The lady that I mentioned is a running coach. I'm going to put you in contact with her. it's, it, you know, if you're Ronnie, she's a very super cool people, a person, but she also has a podcast, very interesting. It's called Brincando el Charco. And they, I'll send you the link.
I'll be more than glad to connect with her.
Yeah, because she taught, they taught, it's about, you know, like Puerto Ricans moving out of the country and all that. And I think you would be a very interesting, you know, person that she would like to talk to you. But anyways, I'll send you all that information. Thank you very much, Mayra, for...
Thank you so much. That was fun.
Yeah, awesome. And hey, if you come to Florida, let me know.
Same thing. If you come to California, hang out. Now if you come to Southern California, Los Angeles again, please, you know, feel free to stop by.
Whoop. Yep. We'll get some pizza and beer and get healthy.
Yes. Yes. We'll work out and then go to eat our pizza and beer.
We'll work it out. Have a good one.
All right. Have fun. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.